We're not going to have you clowning around on the court. So, but I mean, it seemed to work. They beat the Clippers, right?
Do you
It
have to
just felt odd.
clear that like with the league, or is that just something that falls into the local, you know, is that something, is that states' rights on what you do before games or whatever? Like, it seems like
That's a good question. I think they have to clear it. Yeah, I think they
okay.
have to just give him a heads up. I don't think there's anything wrong with it necessarily. There are no rules against it, unless there's some sort of protocol issues, but nah.
Welcome to Debatable. That is in style, and we have somebody new, our friend Harry. What's up, Playboy? Live from Atlanta.
Yes, sir.
Oh, we got. Oh, you
What's
got the
good, brother?
offhand.
Wow,
You got the
that's
weird
weird.
clap. Oh
I'll
my
take
goodness.
Big hand, little hand. Wow.
Tell
Is that
everybody
because
who
you're a
you
junior?
are, Harry, so that in case they don't know and what you do and all that before we get into
Yeah.
stuff.
No, I'm a college football reporter mostly for ESPN, but you also catch me on Around the Horn and I guess here now too, right? So.
Yeah.
How's it possible that you're a college football reporter and you haven't graduated high school yet?
Hey,
You're like,
I
what,
mean,
17, right?
Yeah, at least. You know, this youthful glow,
17 and
baby.
a half.
This is what we do every time when somebody gets on the show that doesn't have gray hair, because Izzy's like, wait a second, I have to look.
I think
where
I got
are
a
they, where are
couple
they
over
ranging?
here, low key,
I have
but you
I
can't
have
see
many.
them.
I'm just waiting for the day that my hair is as gray as Izzy's so that I can just act like being really mean to teenagers on public transportation and stuff like that. You know, that's what I want to use that
I mean,
for.
I had gray hair when I started. Like, I had little gray hairs at 31 when I first started doing the show. They just weren't as evident. People love my hair, I'm not gonna lie. Like,
It's a good
everywhere
look.
I go,
yeah,
I gotta get a lot of compliments. I get people asking me if I dyed it. My own barber asked me if I dye it, which is crazy because he should be able to look at it and tell. But no, I actually don't cut it as much as I used to because I get so many compliments. So yeah.
Wow, that's great. All right, Charlie.
Great way to start the show.
What's going on
hair.
Here? I mean, it ain't tricking if you got it. Okay, that's ancient African proverb. You know what I'm saying? So what's first?
All right, we're gonna start with some football. Obviously, the Seahawks traded franchise cornerstone Russell Wilson for a war chest of assets. They released Bobby Wagner, and now reports are that they might trade Tyler Lockett. And our question is, did the Seahawks make the right move by blowing it up?
Okay, so I'm going to start here because I think that, and because this is what I like to do all the time just to upset Alabaster, I don't know that I would qualify this as blowing it up in this particular way. They got back enough of a haul. They've already been on, at least this discussion as to what they're going to do has been around for 2 to 3 seasons in terms of what Russell Wilson has been as a quarterback and a leader. And like, to me, this is as much moving on as it is blowing it up. At some point, you have to retool. And here's the thing about the Seahawks that I want to remind people of. They got to this position in terms of the success they got with Russell Wilson by trying something that didn't work, and it worked out with Matt Flynn. They gave that guy a bunch of money. Russell Wilson happened to be there, and then he just beat him in camp.
Matt Flynn.
And then they ended up being a championship team. So it's not like the Seahawks are sort of super dedicated to one particular way. They're smart enough to be nimble and know when they've got something that they think is good and when they think they don't. The question is whether or not Pete Carroll still is with the game enough for people to think that he can do something. I don't know the answer to that, but I don't think that this is a big blow up. It's a move on, which in many ways is probably a little bit more emotional, Izzy.
A blow up and a move. I've never heard those as a sort of side by side, like what the difference is between those. What is a, because like you're moving on, you're getting rid of Wagner and Lockett too. Like I, you know, in normal circumstances, if somebody got rid of that level of player, you'd say, hey, what's going on with that team? Are they giving up? And I don't think there's ever really been a situation where you move, like, unless you've got an Aaron Rodgers, you know, waiting in the ranks, where you move on from a franchise quarterback and you don't expect some level of a rebuild. Look, the great thing is it's the NFL. You can sort of turn things around pretty quickly. But if you look at, obviously, the year they just had with Wilson in there, what, 6-8 as their quarterback? And now, you know, you look at this division and it is murderer's row. And it's just, you look at what you have in front of you and say, okay, for the next 2 to 3 years, can I win a Super Bowl with a little bit of tweaks here and there? Nope, not going to do it. And so by the end of that, do you see Russell Wilson as still being a viable option as your starting quarterback? Also not true. And so you have to recover from that one last move that you made to try to stay relevant, which was go get Jamal Adams and give up 2 first-round picks. You have to recover from that because otherwise there really isn't any rebuilding. Otherwise, you're sort of in a Rams, I've got no draft pick situation and got no future. Yeah. So they got those two back. They've got a decent, I wouldn't call it a haul. I guess it's the same difference between semantics, between like moving on and blowing blowing it up, but I wouldn't call it a haul, but it was good. And whether or not it's super high picks, if you hit on those picks wherever they are, then yeah, you can rebuild pretty quickly. Number one problem is they've got to find themselves the next Russell Wilson, the next ideally cheap quarterback that they can build around and follow the same formula that got them to two Super Bowls before.
Harry, yeah, you're a Falcons fan. You know a lot about teams struggling with what their vision is in terms of who they're going to be at the quarterback position. I'm joking.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I mean, it's true. Look, to me, though, like, the haul, like, the haul is more about quantity than quality, though. Sure. Because, and then also at the same time, you're trusting this front office to hit on draft picks, which they have not been doing. Like, this Seahawks team has honestly been in a casual regression since that 2014 Super Bowl when they lost to Tom Brady and the Patriots. And it's just something they haven't really recovered from. And to me, I would feel a lot better about that trade if they would have gotten either Bradley Chubb or Pat Surtain. The fact that they did not get one of the young defensive cornerstones of that Broncos defense, because to me, in a trade like that, like, yes, like, you need to get something for Russell Wilson before you get nothing for him. But you didn't get a guarantee, right? Like, you lost a franchise quarterback, a future Hall of Fame quarterback, but you didn't get back something that you know is going to give you dividends. And you're hoping that you're going to hit on picks. And as far as this, you know, first round pick this year with that number nine, like, I think Malik Willis is the best quarterback in this class and is going to have a very long and successful NFL career for many, many reasons. But are they going to draft him at number nine? Like, I don't think that they're going to do that. So to me, I don't feel very good about this trade for the Seahawks. And to me, if you were going to kind of go towards the split, which we always knew was coming with Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson, I would have picked to stay with Russell Wilson instead of Pete Carroll. But that's just
the last time. That's not something that's just sort of like just walk past. Is the last time they made a deep playoff run was 2014. Like, that's 8 years ago. Like, I think it was Ryan Tannehill, but I can't be 100% sure who the Dolphins quarterback was in 2014. And that's like my team, supposedly. And so I think to have that type of run and to keep going for as long as they did, like, I don't think there should be that level of shock. Obviously, there's a level of, hey, we're losing our guy, you know, warm and fuzzy and all that stuff. But in terms of like being surprised that this was the time to do it, I don't really think that there should be.
I think that's where my definition of blow up and move on changes. Blow up implies some level of surprise change that nobody could see coming that was huge. To me, this was exactly that. It was like, this is not doing the way it used to do. And I think that it's a little bit unfair to say they haven't been as far as they have as if they're not a relevant franchise in between. I mean, that's kind of what I'm saying. The Seahawks have managed to keep it together on some level. Is that partly because of Russell Wilson strictly? Sure. But I think if any franchise I think of that stays in the conversation, even though they're not necessarily going to be at the top, the Seahawks are kind of there. You know what I mean? And that's something I think that if you're a fan of that team, hi, Mina, it's something that you can try to take some solace in terms of what they're going to do going forward. Let me ask you this, though, Harry. What do you think about the Broncos' chances at this point in terms of what they actually are? Their chances for the Super Bowl rocketed up in Vegas yesterday.
Yeah, I think they're great. And I understand that everybody's like, oh, well, what about the other quarterbacks in that division? It's like, yeah, that's true. But, like, the Broncos went 7-10 last year with Drew Locke. That team has pieces. Courtland Sutton, I think Jerry Jeudy, we've still yet to see the best of him. Like, he's still a really, really talented player. Javonte Williams at running back. Like, this is a talented, talented offense. And now you plug Russell Wilson into that. Like, to me, that's kind of like why I'm a little bit, not necessarily confused, but, like, to me, with the Seahawks, like, the offense is the thing that's been working for them the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. I know, like, they were known for their defense and things like that, but Russ was the one part of this that was working. And so now you plug him into this Broncos offense that has the pieces. Their defense allowed the third least amount of points last year. Like, to me, this is an immediate contender. Obviously, they're not going to win every game against the Chiefs or Chargers, but every single game that they go into, I think that you have to say that they can win it.
Quick question. If you guys think that they didn't get, Harry, I think you and I agree with this, that they didn't get a great haul from this, like, do you think they would have held out, there was another team that would have given them more? Or do you think this is pretty much the best they could have gotten for, you know, sort of tail end, you know, past his prime, maybe Russell Wilson?
Well, how much input did Wilson have in this matter? That's my question here, too, because the other teams involved, I mean, the Commanders were on this list, and it's like, look, if I have some level of input on where I'm going to go, it is never going to involve that team. You know what I mean? In terms of, like, the fact that unless you're getting some separately huge payday, that's not something you want to be a part of. And so, I don't know. I mean, I guess after seeing them on what? Good Morning America, talking as a family about where they wanted to be and what they wanted to do. I wonder how much of this was mutual in terms of where he decided he wanted to go.
So worth noting, Russell Wilson did have a no-trade clause, so he was able to nix potential destinations.
Okay.
The report that came out yesterday was that actually the Washington Commanders offered 3 high picks. That's obviously a vague number. You could think they're first or seconds, but an offer comparable to what Denver did. Russ said he's a West Coast kind of guy. And I guess you could probably lean into the fact that he did not want any part of the chaos in sort of...
I was going to say,
just given those limitations, and given those limitations, it feels like they got a pretty good amount for Russell Wilson there. And so, again, it comes down to the picks. It's like you said, was it quantity, not quality? Like, I think the more they have, the more chances they have to hit, period. Because and frankly, they might be due because it's been a while since they've been hit on a good number of draft picks. So, yeah, not terrible.
Denver's not the West Coast, by the way. Just fun fact. No. It's in the mountain time zone.
Yeah. Clinton, there's one other portion of this that we have not discussed, which is, I'm certain that Sierra probably had a say in this because I, too, would not want to go to Washington if I was her. I think Denver's is much more appealing, right? Like, to me, the level or the opportunity for great, cute family videos remains high in Denver, higher than it would in Washington. That's just me.
It's better for the brand. It's better for the brand. That's for sure.
It is.
The mountains are also a lot closer, too. So that's my favorite spot.
It's a business decision for everybody.
What's that?
All right. We're going to pivot to some NBA, where Kyrie Irving went nuts last night. In a good way, on the basketball court, scoring 50 points. And our question is, did Izzy's beloved Kyrie and his 50-point performance last night restore any faith for you in the Nets?
Israel?
Is it my – no, I mean, look, first of all, you got to look at the opponent. And the Charlotte Hornets have just been in a funk. Like, they've – I don't know. Like, they've been – really determined to not be a play-in team this year, and then they're probably going to end up being a play-in team, and it's just the defense is not there. Like, anybody could eat that team up defensively. But Kyrie doing 50 points on 19 shots, it gives me faith that, you know, without James Harden, they can be an offensive juggernaut if he's playing like that against pretty much anybody, although, like I said, this was an easy defensive matchup. I think the fact that he's in this kind of rhythm, this ability to do this without having to play in all the games, without having, you know, the practices and everything else, I think that's heartening. I think that's comforting for Nets fans. You know, I almost think, and not to like fast forward the question a little bit, I almost think it's a little bit more interesting what's going to happen in Philly tonight, both with Ben Simmons on the bench and, you know, those guys in Brooklyn wanting to beat up on James Harden after he left. So that part's a little bit interesting. But Kyrie being in this form at this, with this much opportunity to play, I think is very impressive.
Harry?
Yeah, it's like, to me, the one thing that stood out about last night with Kyrie Irving is like, oh my gosh, man, like, this is why all the other stuff is so frustrating. Like, this guy's bag is so just thorough. The things that he can do on a basketball court and the true wizardry, right? Like, people throw that around with, like, point guards all the time and the things that they're able to do on a basketball court. But nobody has exuded that more than Kyrie Irving. And so that's why it's like, oh, my gosh, I love that we're able to have this discussion today. But, again, it's also just a reminder of why all the other stuff is so bothersome. It's because, like, this dude is truly one of the greatest ball handlers and point guards that we've ever seen. And we've mostly spent time talking about whether or not he's vaccinated and going to be on the court for all their games or not this year. So, you know, eventually it's going to happen, right? And the Nets are probably going to be all right. But that's kind of what sticks out about this to me. It's just like, Kyrie, like, please let this just be your main squeeze, bro, not all the other stuff.
I know, but, like, that's where this becomes – if this were PTI, the word of the day I would use is confounding, because like when he shows up and starts heating people up, I'm realizing now that like I still have more questions than answers as to what the hell I'm supposed to think about this team's ceiling when it comes to the NBA playoffs, because obviously he's a big part of what's going to make them go and what's going to push them past other teams. So again, the basketball is almost always awesome with him, just from a watchability standpoint in terms of the things he brings to the table. But like, I just feel – I feel bad for Nets fans, honestly, at this point, because you're getting this dibble, this dabble. You never really know how you can sort of emotionally commit to what the actual, you know, extrapolation of what you're going to be is. Oh, this is – it's weird, but it's very, like, conflicting in terms of wanting to see him do well, but at the same time realizing that it might get stopped short.
One could say he's the top five point guard of all time. I don't know who that one could be, but one could say that. I'm glad you put that quote up. It's from Kevin Durant, and I want to read it. Younger players, you should watch this game. Learn what it takes to score at that level. At 5'10", 5'11", for him to score that easy, that was just a masterclass. Like, two things there. One, like, the way people talk about Kyrie, the way other basketball players talk about Kyrie, like Andre Iguodala saying he should be top 20 all the time, which is insane to think about. Like, that part to me is just... it's interesting. It's like awe-inspiring, like his game. Like the other greats in the game look at him and just like, gosh, dog it. And the fact that he's just outing Kyrie Irving, who's listed at 6'2", for being 5'10". And he is. I've interviewed him. Like we're eye to eye. And I'm 5'10". I'm, you know, whatever. And so that part makes it so unbelievably even beyond impressive. Like not just getting those shots off and making them, but around the rim and just all, you know, in the middle of all these giants. It's just... the guy's impressive, and so, yeah, he's frustrating as all get out, but you know what? If I can, if we can sort of turn back time and still be healthy enough as a community, as a society, and still have to get rid of that vaccine mandate in New York, I would have totally done that, got rid of all the stupid politics and let this guy play.
Yes.
But, I mean, it's just part of the game today, right. So there's nothing we can do about that.
You know, you would think that somebody like Kevin Durant, whose height is also questioned anywhere between 6'9" and 7 foot, would be a little bit more sensitive than to just out Kyrie Irving like that. I mean, come on, man.
Kevin Durant is 7'3". I mean, he's always the biggest player on the court, it feels like, every single time that you see him. But I don't know, man. I want to see more. I can't believe that I've come to this point of my life where I'm like not exactly rooting for Kyrie, but I'm angry that I don't get to see more of him considering all the stuff he's put everybody through. Kevin Durant, by the way, is becoming very good at sneak disses. Sidebar. There are a couple other things he said in the past couple days.
I'm definitely rooting for a 7-2 Philly-Brooklyn matchup. Like, I feel bad for the rest of the first round series if that happens because it's just going to garner all the attention, and it probably will be a great series, but I don't know. What do you root for there? Like, because, you know, one of those is going to be wildly disappointing, and the hammer's going to come down on James Harden if the Nets don't get out of the first round, and the hammer's probably going to come down on Kyrie and maybe also James Harden for ruining the Brooklyn season if they lose. So that's got catastrophe written all over it if that's a first round matchup. Like, if I'm Brooklyn, I'd rather be the 8th seed and maybe play Miami.
Yeah.
Of course.
As a fan, you're just rooting for a good time, right?
So you know who else is also going to have to do a really good job on this alabaster? We're waiting for it. You know who he is. Harry does not know this joke, but his name is Steve Nash. We can move right along.
I wish we had a quote today. Normally we do a whodunit, where Steve Nash is always the logo. But we're going to move to What Are the Chances, the game where we give you a topic and you tell us the chances of it actually happening. And Izzy makes me write
Steve
nine.
Nash, secretly kind of becoming a trash quote. He's just giving you like beautiful, you know, adjectives here and there, but not really giving you any meat. Sorry, Steve. I hope you didn't hear that.
Second year coach, getting his coach speak. All right, first one. We have an Instagram for you to look at. The question is, what are the chances Ben Simmons actually can't wait for Thursday's game in Philly where he will be on the bench?
Oh, just says can't wait. So
all right.
I think it's interesting the fact that they're bringing him to effectively just say, hey, get this out of your system. Like, absorb some of this that you're going to hear. It's not going to affect your game because you won't be playing. Just prepare for what it's going to be like. And then when we get back here, maybe in the playoffs, you'll have a better feel for it. Because other than that, there is no reason to put him out there to absorb those attacks from the fans if he's not playing.
Harry?
Yeah, I mean, the chances for me are like 75, because if he's not going to be out there on the basketball floor, most of his worries are out the door right now, right? I mean, that environment, right? Like, whether or not he went through all those things, like, if you are an average player, like, Philadelphia is known for the way, right, that they heckle other players, opposing players, and because you've given them, at least in their eyes, a slate, an entire just buffet of things for them to be upset at you about. The fact that he could sit there and not play and you know, he could just sit there and take it, I think that he genuinely is sort of looking forward to that, because to me, given, you know, his mental health issues, this is a step. You're not just jumping into the pool. Like, you're kind of inching your way back towards it. So I do think that the chances are probably higher than I think most people think.
I was going to keep Charlie from having to write a 9 on this one, but then he sort of fact-checked me right there with that card when I said there's no other reason for him to put out there. And then he said that the card said that some people around the league believe he's doing it to hear the attacks from the fans and add to his grievance that he's filing against the NBA, which I'm not really sure how that's going to work. But, you know, I'm going to go with 89.8%.
Okay, so there's a couple things. The first is that if he's looking forward to it, I'm definitely looking forward to it because I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, that's the first time in a long time I can think about saying something about an NBA game in which a person who's not playing becomes the biggest attraction as to what the tune-in element is here. And, like, grievances aside, in terms of the specific legal stuff, like, Ben Simmons kind of weirdly winning the psychological battle here if he shows up just to say, let's see what you're going to do. You know what I mean? Like,
He's not going to give them anything. He's
going to be stone-faced.
He's going to say absolutely nothing. He's not even going to turn his head to hear anything. It's just going to be go fire away.
It kind of fascinates me how in the middle of a season in which James Harden and Joel Embiid are doing amazing things. I know it's only been a short amount of time, but Embiid's had a great season, that Sixers fans are still talking about this. You know what I'm saying? Like, it is very much a conversation that happens all the time. And it's just amazing to me that, considering he hasn't played a game of basketball in a long time, the people where he left are still this concerned about what he does even when he comes back. It's like, he's right about the boorish level of interaction that is going to happen in Philly, but it's kind of making his point for him, which is the whole idea. What's up, Charlie? Yeah.
So if you're Philly, do you go full petty here and play him a tribute video of just the 5 3-pointers he made, including the one against, like, the Shanghai Sharks in preseason?
I mean, you could.
That's an interesting one.
I think you could also do the other method, which is just the full ignore. Like, just ignore the guy. You know what I'm saying?
This is what I was going to go with that, Clayton.
Because I would do.
If I'm a Philly fan, I'm happy with the trade. Like, right. We got James bleeping Harden. We didn't have to give up Tyrese Maxey. Like, we're good. We're better now than we were probably with Ben Simmons. So go ahead. Shower that man with applause. If I'm the Philadelphia Sixers, I'm handing out instructions to the fans. They're like, look, this will help keep us from losing a grievance. You know, let's make sure that we all support these Philadelphia 76ers together. We're in a good place. We don't need to worry about our ex. We're all good. And just, like, do a tribute video and just standing round of applause and just ruin everything for Ben Simmons. I mean,
that really
probably help him, it'll probably make him feel a little good, but I think that would be the way to go. Because, again, if I'm a Philly fan, I'm not mad. I'm good with this trade. He didn't blow up my season. In fact, he made it better.
Right. Right. I would love to see them do the anti-heel move in exactly the way you said. Play that stupid 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, whatever Philadelphia song and, like, make it a big kumbaya thing for him. That'd be hilarious. I would love that. How does that song go, Charlie? I know you know that song.
Is it the ABCDEFU song? Because they should turn that into, like, a positive song.
There's, like, a song that's – oh, man. It's, like – it's from maybe, I think, the mid-70s. I can't sing it because I don't know the words. And you count up to the level 7, and then you get to Sixers, and then you say Sixers.
Oh, that's out of my demographic.
Yeah. No, it's very old.
They do have a 76ers win song they play at the end of every season. Here come the Sixers. Yeah.
It's from the, like, Bullets Fever era of music that was being made about NBA basketball teams. That's where it's from. I will say 100%.
Thank you.
The Bullets Fever era.
You never heard the song Bullets Fever
era?
No.
Wow. Okay, sorry. People made songs about NBA.
I thought Bullets Fever was about New York City in the 70s.
No, it was about the team that went to the finals and lost to the Supersonic.
Bro, if they were making songs about NBA teams back in the day, the one about the Hawks would be pretty sad.
What's next?
All right, we're moving back to football, where Kyler Murray, he's unarchived his Cardinals Instagram post. And our question is, what are the chances that Kyler Murray restoring those pictures means all is well between him and the Cardinals?
Kyler Murray, baseball player, getting back to things with his ex, not ex. They were on a break. They had a very awkward situation online in terms of how they were communicating with each other, and now they're apparently figuring it out. This has gotten a touch past the messiness that I enjoy. It feels like, once again, this is probably why he might have had an issue with this organization to begin with, because things were a little too sloppy and getting out there. He got dealt a pretty decent hand in terms of his argument when, after he asked for money, they were like, we don't know what you're talking about. But then they gave the GM and the coach a deal. So, like, sure, this is like chapter 5 in a 10-chapter offseason book of just what happens with young quarterbacks and franchises that maybe sort of don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about this. I mean, well, let's just back it up here, right? Like, Giannis did this in 2019, 2020, like, with the Bucks, like, right before his, you know, before his new deal, and he ended up winning a title with the Bucks the very next year. So, to me, like, does this kind of matter? Like, yeah, like, you know, covering college football, like, you see a lot of recruits, and, like, a lot of these young athletes mess with their Instagram accounts, and sometimes, yeah, it's because they're upset and they want to remove whatever, you know, type of deal. And then, dude, sometimes, like, they just don't put that much thought into it like that. Like, sometimes you just need a clean slate on your social media, which I highly recommend for people, especially with old tweets. Not all people, but some people. And so, you know, like, to me, like, the chances that
some NBA players get to go back and check their tweets from a while
back. Yeah. So, you know, the chances that it, you know, restoring the pictures means all is well, 50%. 59. I want you to write 59.
There you go.
Yeah.
Learning.
I mean, it's the modern day, you know, pitching a fit. You know, it's the modern day, you know, negotiation tactic where it's just like, hey, just so you know, I'm not happy. And so, yeah, when he puts them back on, it's just like, all right, cool. It's just like wearing, you know, the old T-shirt again, somebody left behind. So I would say the chances that all is well, I don't know if all is well. I think all has been set straight in terms of, hey, these are the lines and this is, you know, where I stand and I'm pretty damn important in this organization. So let's make sure we move forward in the right way. And I think that was pretty much the goal of all of this, because I don't think he was at the point where he was, you know, asking to change teams yet.
Sidebar, did you guys see Mina flame the Cardinals on Twitter? Did you
yes.
see that?
Yes. Oh, my God.
That was savage. Look that up on your order. Maybe we can get a card. It was one
Cardinals
of the more...
out of nowhere, and yeah. then they just get
the franchise
run over.
Has the hold now. Those are the rules.
I'm sorry. I just had to bring that up because I was like, I dropped yeah. my phone. It was that big of a deal. I'll say 1% because that's the number he wears.
Chances that everything's good. I'm going to go with 88%. I mean, with 88%, I'm just keeping him on his toes over there. Eight's totally normal. Eight starts at the top.
So we're trying.
Eight start at the top. Nine start at the bottom. What?
We're trying to figure out how he does every single number or integer. Excuse me. That's what we're figuring out. So we're getting there. We're getting there. What's next?
I never knew I wrote weird nines until this show, but who knows? I'm sure there are other digits that are also weird. All right,
have you seen Brian's clockwise zeros?
No.
Right-handed clockwise zeros. So
that's weird.
All right, we're going to move on to if then.
Yeah. I'm going to think about that for a second.
I'm doing the math, yeah.
A conditional statement. You guys fill it out. The first one. If the Giants bring in Mitchell Trubisky to compete with Daniel Jones, then blank.
Gosh, oh my gosh. Then they got two quarterbacks that you can't really do anything with.
Right.
I mean,
then
like,
boring.
Okay, so hold on. Clinton, yeah. Clinton, let's talk about this. Because, like, this to me, I want this for black quarterbacks. Because who decided that Mitch Trubisky all of a sudden was going to be a hot commodity where he barely played last year? The season before that wasn't great. Like Lamar Jackson, Pat Mahomes, like, we're getting to a greater place, right? Where the black quarterback is not. As a rare commodity as it once was, but like, you will know when we have made progress when, like, I don't know, Tyrod Taylor or something, somebody like that, not him because he's getting some chances, but not all. But when somebody like that, his name starts coming up like this, because I was trying to figure out the other day, it's like, yo, why all of a sudden have we decided like this guy is, you know, the prize next to like Jimmy Garoppolo here in terms of quarterbacks that you can re up with this year? I
thought you were going to tell me something about Mitch Trubisky that I didn't know. I was like, really? Mitch Trubisky? No, you're saying he shouldn't have been given the chance. Got it.
I mean, I think you're exactly right, Harry, because I think of, you know, the Jameises, the Bridgewaters, and you're just kind of like, at some point, all of these guys are retreads of some ilk. And
yes.
I'm sorry. Putting Mitch Trubisky on the front of your programs is not putting butts in the seats. Neither is Daniel Jones. Like, there's a lot of people, I'll bet, if Mitch Trubisky and Daniel Jones walked into a room and weren't wearing jerseys with their names on them, people wouldn't be able to tell the other from who, the, you know, one from the other.
Oh, so, definitely wouldn't be at Daniel Jones. Like, I would not be able to recognize that dude. Even the fact that he's that tall as he is, I'd be looking at him and right. Just another tall businessman. Like, I would not assume that dude is an NFL quarterback.
I mean, the Giants are really spinning their wheels in ways that you thought after they picked up Saquon, you know, now they're talking about he's on the trading block as well. I don't understand what they're doing by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, he was there with Daboll in Buffalo when he was a coordinator. He was the backup quarterback to Allen. So maybe there's something there just as a backup quarterback. You know, obviously you compete right with Daniel Jones, that's fine. But the skill sets, how different are they? They're kind of athletic, but not super athletic, not crazy accurate, don't really throw the ball. I mean, I guess Daniel Jones throws a nicer deep ball than Trubisky does. But in terms of, like, are they that different? No. Like, if Trubisky wins the job over Daniel Jones, do you then cut him? Like, probably right. not. So then you've got that, whatever, top first-round draft pick as your backup. It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense other than maybe it's just, hey, Trubisky worked as a backup in Buffalo. We'll say he's competing there to give Daniel a little, you know, kick in the butt there. But for the most part, he'll be our backup.
Look at yeah. this. I mean, we do feel Daniel Jones can play. I mean, he can, but, I mean, not very well.
Giants president John Mara said, we've done everything possible to screw this kid up since he's been here. So I guess he saying that Trubisky is like a safety net or something as they continue to screw up Daniel Jones' career? Or is this further screwing up Daniel Jones? Because I don't really understand the point in admitting that at this point, unless you're, like, getting him, like, the perfect offensive line at this point.
Say it all the time. It's the worst coached position in sports, and it is the most important one, too. And people botch it all the time in terms of how they handle it.
I think the answer to the question is just an ellipses.
Null set. Oh, null set time. Null set time for your boy. There's no real thing. It just doesn't – it's not a thing.
To be fair –
not even Giants fans care.
Clinton, to your point, isn't, Brian Daboll the guy who coached Josh Allen from someone who was a terrible medium – short and intermediate ball thrower to a very accurate one, sort of maybe the guy who could fix one of these, you know, ex super high picks who is a reclamation project at this point.
How do you credit the coach there? Does he have drills that no other coach has to, or is it the quarterback who is just drilling himself to death and improves his accuracy?
It's about how you implement game plans so that the understanding of the NFL game incrementally goes up in a way where they continue to grow and don't have to make either huge jumps or huge risks. And that was what Buffalo did. They made sure that their offense had targets that allowed him to be quick, faster. And then by the time they got to year two and on down, he was a little bit more confident and he could play differently. And he was a stronger runner. There's ways to do it depending on who your guy is, but you have to commit to that player. That's what the key is, in my opinion, to developing in the NFL. It's just because so many people want a prepackaged franchise guy for the next 10 years, bang and go. And, you know, if you don't want to commit yourself to actually making your team around your quarterback, it's not going to be easy to do.
He did do the impossible, though, and he made Josh Allen more accurate, which just usually doesn't happen. So if he's able to do that with one of these guys, too, he's probably the greatest coach in NFL history.
Fair point. I guess this would be a fun landing spot for someone like Malik Willis, who, given a Daboll coaching staff, he's really that guy. Could turn him into.
Can you tell the people about Malik Willis, Harry? You wrote a tremendous story about this guy's whole life. Tell me something quick about him.
Yo, Malik Willis, this dude, like, okay, so you guys saw the video last week, right, of him giving food to that homeless person?
Sure.
I went to Lynchburg, Virginia, where Liberty University's at, to do a story on him last summer. And I had not met Malik at this point. So I go there, we get into the facility, and, you know, the SID's like, hey, like, you know, he's coming down in a second, he's grabbing lunch. So Malik comes down with a grocery bag with two containers in it, and he goes, I thought you might want some since it's lunchtime. And this man brought me some tacos to our interview, and we sat down and had an hour interview, and everything that you hear him say on the record about just, like, you know, wanting to be a good teammate, like, he feels like he hasn't scratched the surface of his talent yet, which is incredible to me. And he doesn't find anything that he does on the field heroic. This dude just loves to play football, and I think that his ceiling is incredibly high, and I hope that he lands in the right situation.
Now I'm just mad that Tyler Herro didn't offer me any of his Chick-fil-A yesterday. I was pretty hungry at the time.
Heat culture and humble brag at the same dang time. Izzy continues to be a pro. What's next?
All right, we got one more topic here. We got one more if-then, and the topic is if Jeannie Buss is still taking advice from Phil Jackson, then blank.
This is my account. I'm in Los Angeles. I talk about this all the time. This is awkward on one level. It's hilarious on another, considering the relationship between these two human beings. I don't really know what to say about this because the Lakers run their show sort of like anybody who's ever been around is kind of always going to be around unless you are very specifically thrown off of the boat. Magic Johnson's name in this discussion is up as well, just in terms of like, oh yeah, she checks in with Magic, even though the best, probably funniest gift we have of Magic these days is him talking about when he's going to leave. Like, the Lakers are a mess right now, you know, and that's like, I, you know, but that's what you get when you have sort of this family style business, as we've seen on this show. I mean, this is how they do it. You know what I mean? They keep their friends around and they try to see if it's going to work.
It hasn't been run very well. Like, no. The organization has not been run very well. If LeBron didn't want to be there, it would be a nightmarish situation over there. So Jeannie being in contact with Phil Jackson is not surprising, given that I just feel like they probably need as much help as possible. The surprising part is that she's getting in touch with Phil Jackson, because what has he done to build an organization outside of coach it well? And so, you know, the Knicks, that situation didn't last very long. And I do believe, and I don't remember where this ended, but I do believe that Phil Jackson and LeBron James, not great terms after the whole posse comment several years back. So my guess would be Phil Jackson is giving anti-LeBron type of advice here. So, and in terms of, you know, so in terms of Magic, like, Magic is somebody who, I mean, Jeannie's always going to be in contact with and always going to take advice from. But again, do we believe that he has got the best decisions, you know, in mind that's best for the Lakers? I don't know. So my guess is, you know, they're a poorly run organization, so they're probably going to ask advice from the wrong people if they're leaving it to their own devices. So, it's not going to really end well for them, especially in the LeBron thing. Like, LeBron's a guy you need to be talking to. LeBron's a guy who's going to be there, who's going to build the organization around for as long as he's going to be there, and you'll be better off for that. Because if they're left to their own devices, they just make some dumb mistakes.
Yeah, I think to me, like, this might be a situation where, and again, I have no idea, and I don't think any of us have any idea, like, how much advice she's taking from Phil or anybody else, right? Or even like Rob Pelinka, whoever else. To me, though, it does seem like there could be too many cooks in the kitchen, and not necessarily that, you know, Phil or Magic or anybody else is making any kind of decisions.
Not a single sous chef. There are all executive chefs in there.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's got to be some rhyme or reason in there, and it just doesn't seem like there is. And, you know, given what we know from the trade deadline, like, LeBron seems pretty upset that, you know, it seemed at least Rob Pelinka spoke on his behalf when he said, yeah, LeBron was cool with no moves being made, you know, by the deadline. So to me, it's not organized and easy. To your point, like, yeah, if LeBron wasn't there, like, holy crap, like, they would still probably be reeling, you know, looking like those Byron Scott teams with D'Angelo Russell and Lonzo Ball.
And Clinton, what is, so this is the interesting part to me. Like, if you're seeking advice from Phil, what is the advice that you're looking for? Like, is there something that Phil knows, like some loophole that you can move on from Russell Westbrook that everybody else doesn't know? Because unless you've probably exhausted every single opportunity in your mind to try to improve the team, and you punted at the trade deadline. So what exactly is the advice outside of moving forward past LeBron? Because the Westbrook situation seems like it's you can't do anything about it. Next year, $45 million, you think he's not going to opt in? Of course he is. Then what are you going to do with that? I don't know. But the advice just seems odd, because it doesn't feel like he's going to offer anything that's, you know, groundbreaking or anything that anybody else hasn't thought of.
This season has been a remarkable reality check for not just Lakers fans, but I think this organization in terms of how to operate in the modern NBA, because they've hamstrung themselves with a situation that looks bad from a PR standpoint, bad from a roster construction standpoint, and almost even worse from a performance standpoint. It's not a good combination of things at all.
So to finish the sentence, then, it's worse than I thought.
Or yikes is a shorter way to put that.
Yeah. Succinct.
Oh, we're done. That means I can play the song now. Hold on. I found the song I was looking for.
Do it. Gotta beat the buzzer.
No, I don't. Wait, no. Screw it. I missed it. I'm not as good as Pablo Torre.
Oh, my God.
Boo.
What a letdown.
Island boy. That's what you're going to get from me. So that's all I got. I'm going to the islands pretty soon. Harry, good job on your first time here.
Appreciate it.
Good luck on your high school graduation. Hope it all goes well.
Thanks. I'll send you
one, two, three, four, five, Sixers. Goodbye.